This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Before there were internet influencers, before Facebook was Facebook and Twitter was Twitter, before Instagram and TikTok, before viral marketing was even called viral marketing, there was Gary Vaynerchuk, one of the first people to recognize the power of e-commerce, creating niche content to target consumers, and to recognize that the medium and the message are equally important. Gary has shaped internet marketing and the advertising world in immeasurable ways. Gary is the chairman of VaynerX, a modern-day media and communications holding company, the CEO of VaynerMedia, a full-service advertising agency. Gary is the chairman of VaynerX, a modern-day media and communications holding company, the CEO of VaynerMedia, a full-service advertising agency servicing Fortune 100 clients across the company's five locations, and one of the hardest hustlers and empathetic leaders I've ever met. And he's our very special guest on the Investopedia Express this week. Welcome, Gary.
Thanks for having me, my friend. It's really good to be here, Caleb.
Good to see you. I don't want to spend the valuable time we have going over your journey, but it is fascinating. And if folks want to know more about your path and how you got there, there's a lot of material out there.
They can find it.
There's a ton and it's great stuff. But I want to talk about seeing around corners, something you've done your whole career. Can we do that?
100%, my friend.
Let's start with NFTs, those non-fungible tokens. Our audience, our readers and listeners are so interested in those. You've been very busy creating and issuing your own NFTs and selling them. Most recently, you sold your collection of doodles and sketches for over $1 million at auction at Christie's. You started an NFT platform with Julian Schnabel called Art Official. What is it, Gary, about NFTs that has you so enthusiastic? What are they telling us about the future, about collectibles, about authenticity?
I think people are underestimating what digital ownership means. No different than I think people underestimated what having a social media account meant. You know, I don't think, and you know this, we're both of the age where a human having a social media account was foreign. That was not something people did. And today, you know, most people do, even if they have it anonymously to keep tabs on people or use Twitter to keep up with the news or occasionally check Facebook for, you know, birthdays. You know, a shocking amount of society is active on social and even bigger percentages consuming it. And I don't, you know, as somebody who was there in 2005, 6, 7, people didn't see it that way. They saw it as for kids. They saw it as who cares if you're having a piece of pizza or walking the dog. And I think the exact same thing is happening right now in NFT land. I think people are misunderstanding why everyone's going to want to own something digitally. You know, you have all these cool things behind you as we're filming this. There's a reason you want those things. Expressing yourself, decorating your home, a memory to something. There's a million different investment scenarios. And I think that people don't understand that NFTs represent many things. But from an investment standpoint, people want to have digital assets and they're going to trade those digital assets. I also think it goes beyond that. I think the reason somebody owns a Rolex versus a regular watch, a pair of Nikes besides a regular joggers, a Mercedes-Benz instead of a Ford is because of status and expressionism. And then there's the overarching aspect that it is a public transparent ledger confirmed by with no cost association in comparison to leases and mortgages and all the other things. And so to me, this is a foregone conclusion. To me, it's similar to 95 internet life though. You know, I think much like we saw on the internet, there was a lot of public stocks that made no sense, that were worth a lot of money. Pets.com becoming the poster child. And I think the same thing's happening in NFT project land. I think the NFT thing is going to happen. And I want VFriends to be Amazon or at least eBay, right? And they were there as dollar stocks back when everything crashed. And I think the same thing's happening in NFT land. The macro concept is here in perpetuity. On the micro, I do believe we're in a gold rush moment right now. And there are a lot of people buying NFTs that will not be as valuable as they pay for them. And that's a treacherous thing to navigate through. The macro's right, and there's an Amazon and eBay out there. Oh, by the way, 8 out of 10 of them are pets.com. How are you going to figure that out? There's a lot of ways to play it. If you're high risk, high reward, you're buying the individual stuff. If you're a little bit different, you're looking at the whole landscape and deciding where you want to be a participant, selling the shovels and the picks, buying individual projects. You know, for example, I've spent a lot of money on CryptoPunks, and I feel like it's my most safe investment I own, really, genuinely. I'm that convinced that that project, the OG project, the one that kind of established the 10,000 images framework, the one that is owned by many important people and collectors, is incredibly sound. And I think the bottom floor of that is $400,000 a piece right now. And so, you know, this is how I think about things.
Well, there is something to the digital authenticity, especially in a digital world that we all live in, where what is real anymore? What is money? We get that question a lot on Investopedia. And I don't think people mean what is a dollar bill. I think they mean, what does it conceptually mean, metaphysically mean, in a world where everything's digital, things can be faked? How important is the authenticity, that signature? This is a Gary V original to the value of things looking forward out a decade or so.
I mean, it's everything, right? I mean, that was the vulnerability of the world we live in today. There was fakes. There's no fakes in NFT right. land. It's incredibly powerful, and provenance is understood, and who owned it, and the transparency matters. You know, Christie's and Sotheby's are respected and accepted, but it's human based. They can only be so right. It's inconceivable to me that there haven't been fake things sold through the greatest auction houses in the world.
Well, there might just be, but you've gone a step further with what you're doing with NFTs. Each one of these tokens you recently sold with the VFriends collection includes a smart contract with the metadata that you can interact with the buyer with, right? These, they can get exclusive access, I'm reading, to an annual business event called VCon for 3 years. This is more than just buy something that I created because I'm Gary V. Here's my digital signature. It's a one of one. You're creating community with them. Is that where this is headed to?
Yeah, I mean, I think in pecking order, buy this for me, I'm Gary Vaynerchuk, is probably last. You know, I know some people will. I know I've earned some reputation and respect, but nowhere close to the economics associated with it. What's happening here is there's two major value propositions. One is the upfront, which is a 3-year ticket to a business conference that I'm incredibly excited about. The second one is, so that's correct. And there's a 3-year conference. And the first one is in Minnesota on May 19th to the 21st at US Bank Stadium. So real epic kind of business conference, very valuable ticket. If it was done in the real world, no, non-NFT, call it $3,000 to $5,000 a piece for a ticket over times 3 years. So there's some perceived value there. I think the interesting part is on top of that is I'm standing up an intellectual property. This is, you know, even though with the big Christie's, 5 of my original drawings sold for over $1 million, like you said, and obviously a lot of fun headlines like Gary outperforms Warhol and Harding, like, you know, crazy stuff that makes me laugh. On the flip side, the reality is that I feel this is more Walt Disney than it is Andy Warhol. I'm trying to build an intellectual property, TV, film, action figures, this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, these tokens are the original cells, right? They're, and I can create value creation as I keep adding value to the ticket holders, the token holders, the NFT holders. So it's an economy that you're building as a creator of an NFT project.
And we know how valuable those original cells of Mickey Mouse or Steamboat Willie, as he Correct. Was originally called, go for. Hey, we spend a lot of time thinking and writing about the future of money at Investopedia. Crypto and blockchain are changing the game with DeFi, decentralized finance. How do you imagine us transacting in the future? Or are we already kind of there with PayPal and Venmo? Where is DeFi taking us from your perspective?
DeFi, you know, one thing I pride myself in a lot is not talking about things I don't know. My grasp of NFT life is extraordinary. There's just no scenario that it won't play out, not even government regulation. My understanding of decentralized finance, central trading, financial arbitrage is actually very rudimentary. I don't get passionate about it. I don't understand it. I've spent almost no time on it. So the answer to your question is I don't know. What I do know is that there was a time on earth where gold was worth nothing. Zero. There just was. There was human beings that walked around and the perceived and actual value of gold was low. And the same for many things that have come along in society. And so I think that people underestimate how shit actually works. They're bad at history lessons. For me to believe that Bitcoin or another alternative coin, Ethereum, whatever it may be, can build enough momentum and acceptance in society. And by the way, on the flip side, I'm incredibly educated on what happened with tulips in the 1500s. You know, so like it goes both ways, Beanie Babies, you know, it goes both ways, but I find it naive for anybody to think it's going to be the way it's going to be forever. And that's how I think about this subject matter, that this is definitely a logical moment. And I think both of us can agree, and you probably know this better than I do, but I think we can all agree that Bitcoin is probably dramatically more far along than what many would have predicted it to be 8-9 years ago. And that in itself has to, right?
When you have Visa, MasterCard allowing you to transact, when you have the biggest money managers allowing you to invest in crypto or pathways to that, we're here, right?
I believe so. And I believe we're here on the consumer lens. You know, to your point, the Visas, the MasterCards, the biggest trading firms, they have so much power, so much anointing power, so much gateway power, but all they can do is slow it down.
Right. People want it.
The cat's out of the bag.
Absolutely. Well, you were the original influence marketer in my mind, and you're still on the all-star team, a perennial all-star, but that has totally exploded with platforms like TikTok and Instagram. What's the natural extension of influence marketing as you see it?
Well, I think what a lot of influencers are going to do now is, and we've seen this progression, it went from, you know, just building up a following and monetizing offline, a book deal, speaking. I lived that back to my original influencer world. Then you started getting into the monetization of the ads, right? The YouTube ad revenue started becoming quite meaningful. Then you started getting into brand deals. Brands started to compensate influencers, and there are plenty of people who make 7 figures a year being a human being on social and having brands pay them money to endorse them, no different than Mickey Mantle or John Wayne, just an influencer form. Then you started seeing, you know, them influencers starting to build businesses like I did with Empathy Wines, you know, 8-9 figure exits for influencers who built a company on the back of their audience. And now I think you'll see in NFT land, people build, you know, ecosystems, you know, financial vehicles, economies around them. And I think that's where we're going.
Let's talk about investing again. I'm not going to get too deep into the platforms, but let's talk about investing, which is our domain. You've been a pretty savvy investor and you've been an early investor in some very successful public companies. Given what we've seen, Gary, in the past 18 months, millions of new traders and investors joining the market through the Robinhoods, the eToros, the Webulls, or even a classic online broker. How is that game changing now that we have this very engaged retail base?
It changes a lot. You know, you've got a lot more casual investors, many of whom view it as a vehicle for community, many of them who view it as social gaming is what I would use. You know, like people are buying to game the dynamics. We're seeing investing as an identity. We've seen that with entrepreneurship. As a decade now,
you have Roaring Kitty is somebody we all know.
That's right. So I think that a couple things on that. One, there's also a lot of naivete and ideology and lack of education, which can lead to huge vulnerability. So, you know, a lot of the quote unquote kids, they like me and I keep pushing them, like, be thoughtful, you know, like get educated. But I think, you know, it speaks well. I actually think it's probably one of the biggest reasons I'm bullish on NFTs. I still believe that the way NFTs are going to play out is somebody's going to be more excited to show you they're holding an X copy or a CryptoPunk than holding 17 shares of Tesla. But to your question, we're in the age of showing that you hold 17 shares of Tesla is cooler than having 17 shares of Bell Atlantic 40 years ago. And so it's becoming culture. And that that is a very capitalistic evolution that makes a lot of sense to me and where we are in the lifehood and the life cycle of modern America.
Do you think young investors believe that they can expect to build real wealth investing in the stock market? It's been pretty good for a long time for people that have been invested and paid attention and done that work. But do you think today's kids, so to speak, teens and call it teen to 25, think that that is the pathway to wealth?
I do think a lot of people believe that. I do believe that there is a lot more under 25 year olds that think investing, flipping, being an influencer, building a platform is the right path versus going to college and getting a good job. Or even 15 years ago, being an entrepreneur and building a business for a decade. This is a very different reality. And I think the children are actually not wrong. I think the internet, a mature web 2.0 with an emerging web 3.0 is ingredients for incredible opportunity.
When you say 3.0, what are you thinking about? What's in your mind as that manifests?
Blockchain, decentralized servers, you know, building the entire internet all over again on the blockchains, Ethereum specifically, or Solana or Cardano or any other blockchain that emerges where people can develop on top of it.
Let's talk about how you identify investments that you want to make, public or private, public companies, private companies, businesses you get into. What's your criteria? What are your basics that you put everything through when you look at that prism?
Do I believe in the hypothesis that consumers will like this? And do I believe the human being that's driving it is capable of driving it or adjusting to reality? It's as simple as it gets. And I have a knack for understanding consumers, which already puts me in a very good spot on hypothesis. I also have a very strong understanding of timing. One thing that I've understood now in hindsight, when I look at my success is, I'm good at timing. Like when all my friends are like investing in VR, I understand that VR is going to happen, but I was stronger than them 4 years ago saying VR is further away than you think. You know, I was paying attention to NFTs from afar before I got loud about it. You know, I just spent a lot of time thinking about timing.
Timing is everything, but you also mentioned people, right? Believing in management, believing in that vision, in the ability to get it across the goal line or carry the company through thick and thin, but also the ability to change your mind.
Well, that's exactly right. And have you heard about this ship? It was called the Titanic.
I think I have.
From everything I've read, it was really built well. But the jockey who was riding the horse made human error. The CEO is the variable of success. Her or his ability to navigate every day is 100% reflective.
Shocker. And we see that time and time again. You could have the greatest product, greatest idea, greatest timing in the world, greatest bench staff, but a wrong move at the top can take you right into the iceberg. Let's talk about VaynerX and VaynerMedia. You've gone way, way beyond advertising. You have talent management, you got a speakers bureau, a media agency. Where are the cards on your table and why do you believe in some of these key marketplaces?
You know, we have an NFT consulting firm in the Bain & McKinsey kind of space for NFTs. We have a production facility that we're about to rebrand, VPro now, Vayner Productions, but we're going to rebrand it. A little scoop there for you. That's coming any day now. I want to build things for myself. I build VaynerX from a lens of in perpetuity ownership. I'm not looking to maximize profit per fiscal year. And I'm definitely not building it for transaction. And so I put my bets on things I want to own. I want to own a publishing company. I want to own an agency capable of marketing anything. I want to own. That's why there's the Sasha Group and VaynerMedia. VaynerMedia for Fortune 500, Sasha Group for Fortune 501 down. Vayner Commerce. I want to be acceleratingly strong in commerce. Talent is for people, you know, personal brand building. It's things I believe in. So NFTs, I fall in love. Vayner NFT is a standalone business, right? So these are the things that I really spend time on. And then regionally, Mexico City, Singapore, London, you know, this is not by accident. You know, I want to create a global communications infrastructure.
Yeah, and you completely have. You are a marketer at heart and by trade. What commercial or campaign in your life influenced you the most as you were growing your businesses, as you were growing your ideas? Do you remember a commercial, a jingle, an ad, a person? What was it that said, that speaks to me?
Many. Where's the Beef comes to mind immediately. That really spoke to me. It caught my attention. It made me want to go to Wendy's when I only knew McDonald's and Burger King existed. I would say that PC Richards, that...
Oh, it's Pavlovian.
It's a very big thing. If you're on the East Coast, you've heard that, you know what it means. And I was always fascinated that 3 seconds of a sound can make me think of a brand. The entire Leo Burnett era of character development, Marlboro Man, Keebler Elves, I'm so passionate about that. I'm sure Be Friends is affected by that. 1980s cartoons, Transformers, Thundercats, He-Man, Rainbow Bright, Care Bears, Strawberry Shortcake, literally using television as a medium to build up intellectual property. It's remarkable, and that's how I see NFT too. I see NFTs being the place where I build my Simpsons, my Harry Potter. And so those things that I just referenced stand out dramatically.
Let's talk about the last year, year and a half. What influenced you the most in the past year? What did you change about the way you operate as an executive or as a father, as a person, given the last year that we've been through or so?
Before COVID, I started being self-aware that lack of candor as an executive and a leader. Gary V, the person everybody knows on the other side, strength was candor. People loved that I quote unquote shot it straight on stage in meetings. But me on one-on-one in every relationship on and off the field of business, I struggled with deploying critical feedback or negative feedback. I try to get around it with optimism, oftentimes met with delusion. And over the last 3 years, I've really chipped away at it. And in my new book that's coming out in November, I called it 12 and a half. It was about these 13 emotional ingredients that I think are essential for business success as a leader or as an employee. And I called it 12 and a half because kind candor is one of them, but I go very vulnerable and say, I'm only at a half on this one. And that's the biggest thing I've changed. I think I'm going through a positive journey around candor.
Well, you not only preach empathy in your business and you have the wine, but I know for a fact that you practice it as a leader, as a father, and as a friend. When did you come to that realization and how has it made you better?
Early. I knew as a child that I was nicer than most people, that I was more compassionate. I didn't have the words of empathy. I knew I was more sensitive. I legitimately recall crying or being on the verge of tears when kids would pick on kids who had disabilities or were poor. You know, I grew up in my first several years of America, I grew up in lower middle class environments. You know, you find yourself in those environments, there's some kids that are even less fortunate than you wearing the same clothes to school. I was always very sensitive. I cried a lot. I had a lot of emotions and feelings, but they were my superpower. And I knew as I got older and older and older, it became very clear to me how to harness it. And I'm so proud of my compassion and empathy and sympathy. And feelings towards others. It, you know, I love that I get such a sense of happiness by delivering for others. It's a beautiful, lucky, I want to use that word. It is my DNA. It is a beautiful, but it was, you know, and then even my mother who accentuated it, there's luck in having that mother, right? Like, I'm incredibly grateful for the circumstances that led me to be very passionate about other people's feelings.
You have a lot of employees now. You got them all over the world. You got a big operation. So you have to extend that obviously through VaynerX, VaynerMedia, and all the different touch points that you have, which I'm sure is challenging as a leader, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is how we know each other. Your incredible sister, like, you know, it's about surrounding yourself with people that have that moral compass and seeing them for their strengths. One of the great moments in my life, forget about my career, involves your family. Me being able to see that in her and push that agenda, and then us go through our relationship graph, you know, because it takes two to tango, her doing the steps she needed to get to where she is and what she means today. So one of the greatest things that I've ever been associated with. Makes me so happy because it's players in a position to succeed, right? Players in a position to succeed.
Yeah, and I mean, who's better than Claude Silver? One of one for sure.
One of one for sure. I love that.
And we have both learned a lot from her. And folks on this podcast know she's a big hero of mine as well. Let's go out on this, Gary. We're Investopedia. We're built on investing terms, on investing education. What's your favorite investing or finance term and why?
Arbitrage. Because it's what comes natural to me. Boy, can I see it. And my great strength is what I see as gray. People are very good at math arbitrage, what I call black and white, but I'm sure everybody listening here, you may have a slight head start, but any mathematical arbitrage is quickly understood by many others and by nature is commoditized. Gray arbitrage is a secret weapon. When I can see who's going to be popular before anybody else, when I can understand what people are going to do before anybody else, it leads to a whole lot of good stuff and has been, you know, when I'm investing in Facebook 4 years before it goes public, and then when it goes from 45 on its IPO to 19 and everybody's selling and I'm doubling down, that wasn't luck. That's just seeing the arbitrage.
Right. Seeing the arbitrage and seeing around corners, something you have done ever since I met you years and years ago. And it's been a real pleasure to know you and watch what you've been able to build, but also the person that you've become. Gary Vaynerchuk, thanks so much for joining the Express. So good to have you here.
Thanks, Caleb.